morning, everybody. Welcome. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Sports Machine with Slim. What a week we got. I'm excited. Are you excited?
Well, I'm excited, too.
You're excited?
Yeah, when I'm not muted, I am excited.
You were muted just in case you were so excited that you weren't ready to be on the radio. It's Tuesday. That means Amity is in the studio.
How's it going?
Yes, it's going good. Everybody out there. You're doing great, everybody out there. New Hampshire, parts beyond, the far reaches of the earth, the globe. You're all listening to the Sports Machine with Slim today, aren't you?
You got an answer? He asked how you were.
Their echo.
Come
their
on.
Echoes. Yes.
Oh, I think I hear it.
Yes.
The faint cheer of happy fans that are excited for March to just keep getting bigger and bigger. Favorite time of the year.
The games only get bigger. Yeah, sports time. This is absolutely nuts. As a sports talk show host, what do you talk about today, right? We got the Celtics.
Everything.
Ridiculous how good they are. The Boston Bruins play tonight, and we are in segment two. We are going to talk with Thomas Poeck, who, a former NHL player, loves to call the show, loves to talk some Bruins hockey. I love to try to get him off kilter and emotional and maybe even somewhat negative every now and then. He just refuses to do so. Yeah. Level-headed, positive. Mitty might, I might try to enlist his help today to get Thomas
absolutely.
Some sort of reaction, get him thinking about criticizing some folks on the Bruins.
Sure.
But why would we do that? We have the most points in the NHL, I think, even this morning. Best team in the NHL, Mitty.
Yeah, what's funny is they don't even seem like they're playing like the best team, and yet they're kind of hanging on. I feel like they're kind of going through a bit of a identity crisis all of a sudden or something. I mean, they're playing well, but they're not playing the way we've been seeing in the past. They're just not there.
They're there for me, baby.
I don't know.
Let's see what happens tonight. We play one of the worst teams in the league tonight, I think, Ottawa. So March Madness. We got tons of college basketball action. Mitty came in. He brings me a bracket. I have not, as a sports fan, it's embarrassing that I haven't looked at a bracket yet, haven't printed one out, haven't filled one out. Every other year of my adult life by now, I would already have multiple versions of a bracket filled out. Granted, a lot of times they'd be totally wrong and worthless. So maybe this has been the best route to go. Maybe Mitty's bracket that is now in front of me here will be the one.
I'm going perfect.
Oh, you're going perfect.
Yeah.
So you're going to want to stay tuned as we talk college basketball in segments 3 and 4 today. Let's start the show with the Boston Celtics, because this is just insane how good we are. It doesn't matter. Like, if Tatum, Brown, Porzingis, Jrue Holiday, and Derek White all didn't play in the next game against Milwaukee, we'd probably still win. Like, Wednesday night, we're playing the Bucks. For people that don't know, that's tomorrow night. So more reason to get excited for the Celtics, a game that actually matters. But right now, like, we just roll out our subs, and we destroy teams. Last night, I didn't watch the very beginning, but when I tuned in, I think the second period, I made some notes. Pick and roll. I see this Mihailik guy. And I don't even know his first name. I just know number 50, I think. He comes in. Boy, he plays hard with the pick and roll. He runs into the pick, and then he gets over and fights as best he can to get back in front of his guy. It's no longer just, switch everything on the picks, which is how the Celtics have been the last few years. Mitty, as a Celtics fan, do you know what I'm talking about when I describe that play right there?
I do.
Is it as infuriating to you as it is to me to see this lackadaisical Celtics, let's switch everything defensive strategy they've incorporated the last few years?
Of course it is. I mean, we talk about it all the time. The Celtics are just always this super talented team, and they're always, they're always showing us this flash of being just the best thing since Kingdom Come, and then they just kind of let up on people, and they just kind of say, you know what? For a few minutes, why don't you guys score? You guys do it. We're kind of tired. It's like, no, come on, man. Keep that fire going. Give Tatum a Red Bull at the end of the game or something, because he needs to keep just hammering on. Like the Patriots
like
did 7. Do like the Patriots where
right.
you're up by 25 and you're still just hammering points on the board.
But wait a minute. Is that 07 team the team 08? That lost in the Super Bowl?
Hey,
I don't know.
Wait.
That's just maybe not the ideal. I love the mentality. I'm on board with the hunger. Try to lay the lumber to teams, but we got to finish the job this year, baby.
Yeah.
There
absolutely.
We go. All right, so good. This is what I'm talking about, fans. It's a simple adjustment.
That was a bad comparison. Now that I think about it, wow,
truly horrific. But that's okay. Don't worry about that. We're gonna move right on. We're not getting locked in the past here with the Sports Machine with Slim. We're next generation sports talk radio for a reason. We're uplifting. we're positive thinking. Does that mean I don't criticize? Does that mean we don't try to get Thomas Polk to say negative things about players? No, but ultimately it's for the betterment and improvement of the team so that when it comes playoff time, we're ready to smash like we have been during the regular season. Mitty, you and I were just talking about Jaylen Brown.
Oh, gosh.
Bring the people some statistics here for what Jaylen Brown has been doing since the All-Star game, in which he had how many points in the All-Star game?
In the All-Star game, 36 points.
People forget this. Jaylen Brown had 36 points in the NBA All-Star game.
Meaningless points, I think, but they went in nonetheless. I think the All-Star game is more about acceptance. If you're the guy scoring big points, it's because all the other All-Stars are saying, well, you know what, it's your season. This is your year. Go ahead and get your points. But since the All-Star break, when Brown finally got that recognition he's been looking for so long, it was 21 points, 30 points, 31 points, 25 points, 29 points, all wins. 21 points, Cleveland loss.
Cleveland loss. That was the game we were up by 18 in the fourth quarter, right?
Yep.
And we lost 105 to 104. Jaylen Brown has 21 points, his lowest game out of the All-Star break. You mentioned the other game, he had 21 against Chicago Bulls, second game back. But we won that game 129 to 112. He only took 12 shots. He was 7 out of 12, 21 points. So
efficient.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I don't see 21 points there as a negative. But you're talking 36 points All-Star game, 30, 31, 25, 29. Then he has 21 against Cleveland in a loss where we blow an 18-point lead. That game's like last year, dude. That's last year game.
Slim, get this. 41 points very next game against Denver. And that was his highest point total, also a loss. But after that, it was 27 points twice in a row, 37 points, 31 points. So clearly, Jaylen Brown is on another level. And his game against... which one was it where who'd we play the other night here?
He's insanely good, right? Just his last five games, maybe 41, 27, 27, 37, 31. Like, that is what the best players in the NBA do over a five-game stretch.
Absolutely. And against the Pistons, he scored his 31 points with a win. That was the night Tatum was on the bench with a bad ankle. And if anybody saw that game, Brown stepped up and owned that court.
That's last night.
My time to shine. If you saw last night, he knew that was his game.
I love to see it. And my brother Dave had said this with the take last week, calling in and be like, if you're going to have Jaylen Brown scoring this many points and being the focal point of the offense, especially at the beginning of the games, like, you got to be prepared to let him be the initiator and the focal point of the offense when it comes closing time. I will tell you, against Cleveland, I need to go back and watch this game where he only had 21 points and we blew the 18-point fourth quarter lead. Was Jaylen Brown the primary option at the end of that game? I don't think he was. I watched some of that game. I think that was a game we continuously went to Tatum at the end. And from a strategic standpoint, just like, listen, we got 15 more games, Celtics. You better figure out who's going to be the guy at the end so you don't have one guy on the court going, man, I really should have the ball right now, but he's standing around and watching.
At the end of a game, you need to know exactly what you're going to do. You need to. Whether you're winning by five, losing by three, it doesn't matter. Every scenario has an exact thing that your team is built to do. Oh, and by the way, did you see what else happened in the last game? Derek White, his very first triple-double.
I did, and you know what was best about that? Because I was watching the game, and I didn't know he was on the verge. He just needed one more assist for the triple-double, and he passed it out to Peyton Pritchard, who's playing like an absolute ridiculous rock star right now.
Oh,
but he caught off a pick. He catches the pass, and he let it fire with the guy like right in his face, and it goes in. And I was just like, boy, that was an aggressive shot. Like, wow, Peyton, you're really feeling confident. And then as soon as he makes it, I see the big man, Luke Kornet, raise his hands up, and he's all excited. I'm like, wow, they're happy for Pritchard that he made that three. Interesting. And then the statistician or whatever comes on online, the announcer says, oh, that's Derek White's first triple-double. So they knew what they were doing. It was a coordinated effort by Peyton Pritchard.
And speaking of threes as well, by the way, have you been watching them shooting the three-pointer? I mean, every single person on the team. Did you know in the last four games the Celtics have played, they have scored at least 20 three-pointers? And that is the first time any team in NBA history, including the Golden State Warriors with Steph Curry, has ever done that.
I didn't know that about the threes, right? We had 22 last night, 22 for 49. I had said on the show yesterday, Mitty, I heard over the weekend, the Celtics had two games in a row with 24 or more made three-pointers, and that was the first time ever in NBA history. So now you're telling me it's four games in a row over 20, and that's the first time a team's ever done this.
And we're going to keep saying that they shoot too many threes. I mean, they're at a point right now where they're setting records, so maybe it's right.
You would have thought Golden State would have done this type of stuff during their run over the last few years.
Baby.
There we go. It's something to get excited about. It's also time to start getting excited about the Bruins, people. We'll be talking about them when we come back from break here. This is the Sports Machine with Slim and HTalkRadio.com. You're listening on the radio, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord and 101.9 FM in Manchester, New Hampshire. Machine with Slim. Middy's in studio. We're getting geared up to talk some Bruins hockey over the next 10 minutes. And to help us in that effort, Thomas Polk is on the line with us. Good morning to you, Thomas.
Good morning, Thomas.
Good morning. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You know, I just heard the commercial that you have playing on our airwaves here in that break, and it says, you can call me if you want to talk hockey, but I'm probably more used to you if you want to talk about health insurance. Do you actually want any of our listeners to be calling you on 603-399-6687 to call you to talk about hockey?
Well, that's all right. We can do both, right? So I have no issue chatting about hockey a little bit. That's fun.
Well, especially when you're in a sales job, as I had been for 20 years before getting into radio, and actually I still do sales now for the radio, so I've always been in sales. It's great to make connections with people that you have common interests with, especially because, well, you're already talking to them about that. Well, then, hey, it comes time, hey, I got a question, or hey, a friend of mine has a question about this. Can you utilize your expertise? I had an aunt who I haven't talked to in 2 years reach out to me the other day asking me about recruiting because that's my focus for 20-plus years. She knows I'm good at that stuff. I said, hey, yeah, I'm happy to talk to you. Well, same thing with business. So if somebody does call you to talk about hockey, it's laying the groundwork and the seeds for a future call to talk about health insurance. Middy, while you're here, you have any questions about health insurance?
Well, if I could afford to have good health insurance, or if it existed, I'm sure it does with you.
Did you just get Thomas's number, Middy?
I personally would like to have coverage. Does coverage still exist like it did when I was young, where you go in and you pay like a $10 copay and then you stop worrying about all your bills?
Unfortunately, that's not the case. But, you know, there are plans out there. Obviously, not as well as you're hoping for, but, you know, it's very heavy regulated. And just want to watch out and make sure you go with one of the coverages that is approved by the Division of Insurance. A lot of scams and stuff going on out there where, you know, they get people and offer them the world at no cost. And then they find out it's not actual health insurance.
How does that work, Thomas? Like, you have to deal with this? You hear stories, people are falling for scams about health insurance? What happens in that?
All the time. There's plenty of stuff out there. They make it sound like it's real health insurance, and then they find out that, you know, it only covers certain things. You know, it's the fine print that matters.
And how are they getting linked up with those people? Is that, like, general prospecting on, like, social media advertisements? Are these, like, total scammers from the get-go? Or are they just, like, industry professionals that don't know what they're doing?
No, I think they're just leaving out certain parts of it to make it sound like it's a health insurance that's approved by the Division of Insurance in whatever state you're in. And then they kind of get you. And, you know, it all sounds good. And for most people, when they just use it on a normal basis and nothing major comes up, it's not an issue. It's when the bad stuff that happens and you're actually hospitalized for, you know, days, weeks on end, and there's major stuff that needs to be done. That's when you find out what's really going on.
Well, yeah, and then you got Denzel Washington with his kid in the hospital. He's got guns. He's holding everybody hostage so his son can get a new heart. And that was real, right? John Q.
That was, yeah.
Did you see that movie?
From the past.
That was based on a true story, wasn't it?
Oh, I'm not sure. It was a pretty good movie, though.
I love Denzel.
I love Denzel Washington. What's this movie he's in? The Equalizer or something? I think he's got three of them. This guy is a bad man in those movies. I love me some Denzel Washington.
We'll get to sports later.
Yeah, right. Thomas, what's your favorite Denzel Washington movie?
He's got plenty of good ones. I'm a big fan of his, though, but I'd probably have to go with American Gangster.
Oh, nice. I like Out of Time.
Glory? You guys ever seen Glory? That's a good one. Out of Time, I don't think I've ever seen that.
Oh, he gets framed for stealing a bunch of money. He's a cop, and he basically has about 24 hours to erase all these tracks that lead to him. But, you know, somebody's setting him up. So, of course, it turns into this big, crazy gunfighting, you know, speed chasing wild movie with explosions. But good movie.
What about American Gangster, Thomas? That movie I've heard of, but I don't know if I've ever seen that.
Oh, he's basically like a drug lord, you know, Vietnam War, where makes the soldiers bring the dope over, and then he just sells it out of New York and brings his family and kind of runs it like the Italians used to do, who he worked for.
Thomas, I forgot to say this one. I'm sure you're going to agree. What about, which one was it? Training Day. Training Day.
That was a good one, too.
King Kong ain't got nothing on me.
That's a good one, too.
I don't do a good Denzel voice.
The Bruins are saying that to the rest of the league right now, Thomas. King Kong ain't got nothing on them. I love me some Bruins. I feel like we are starting to really ramp up towards the playoffs, and we're winning, and the way we're winning is exciting and fun. What do you think we do here going into tonight's game? Ottawa's horrific, aren't they?
Well, I would say they're horrific. The standings are tough for them, you know? I think they're a way better team than what they have shown. I think they expect it to be way higher up. And, you know, the way they are right now, as I said in the last show, we talked about it, those teams at the bottom, they're dangerous. I mean, they're just playing for next year's contract for some of these guys.
Look
so,
at the Hurricanes last year.
Yeah, it's one of those things they can play pretty freely. I mean, with the way the standings are right now, it doesn't look good for them. It doesn't look like they're going to have a sniff at it. I mean, they're 15 points out of the second wild card spot. There's just not enough games left.
Yeah, some people might call that horrific.
We saw what the Hurricanes did last year in the playoffs. Nobody expected them to even go past the first, I mean, obviously against us, but, you know, they went to the Stanley Cup, didn't they?
You're talking Florida, right? You're talking Florida.
You're talking Panthers.
Panthers, sorry. Yeah. My bad. Yeah.
That's all right. I got the computer in front of me, Mitty, so you can use
it's
that
It's hard
as
to remember
excuse.
All these teams.
Thomas, what are we looking at for tonight's game from the Bruins' standpoint? Any injury concerns we need to talk about? What about the goalie side of things? Swayman's given up 5 goals in his last 2 games, you know.
I mean, hey, that last game, it was fun to watch as a fan, right? They came out, it was a tight game. The Bruins really played strong at the first period and then got away with a lead. It was 5-2. They looked really strong, and I don't know, they were sitting back a little too much again and kind of let them come back. But, you know, that seems to have been the MO a little bit so far this year. They're definitely going to clean that up going into the playoffs.
I love that game. I talked about it yesterday. 7 goals were scored in the third period. The Bruins scored 3 goals within a 2-minute-and-40-second stretch to open up a 5-2 lead. And then, boom, before we know it, it's 5-4. And then the Bruins score again with 3 minutes left. And then with 2 minutes left, Philadelphia scores again to make it 6-5. And you're just like, what is happening here this third period? So exciting as a hockey fan. Like, you have to root for this team. You have to love them.
Yeah, I mean, the facial expression on the Flyers coach, John Tortorella, was priceless after the 3 goals in the 2 minutes. Like, you could see he was holding it back. He was about to strangle a couple of his guys.
He did, literally. He's a guy who had got suspended for a game or two, right, Thomas? Because the refs, like 3 or 4 games back, Tortorella, I'm pretty sure it was him, he was so mad, he swore, they kicked him out of the game, and he goes, I'm not leaving. And he kept saying it for like 5 minutes and wouldn't leave the bench. That was him, right?
It was him. It was a little funny interaction. And I'm actually surprised on how heavy the leak came down on him with the 2-game suspension and the 50,000 in fines. But, you know, maybe they wanted to set a precedent. But, you know, that guy's been around for a long, long time and has had some success in the league. So, you know, he has those Flyers going and they're right there in the cusp of making it this year.
What happened that he was so mad? Why he wouldn't leave the... Like, why did he get thrown out of the game? Do you know? I really didn't see that. I just saw on social media.
Well, obviously, he was unhappy with some of the calls that they made. But I think what got him really riled up is that the ref didn't come over to talk to him. obviously on the rest part, I get it. You get yelled at, and I'm sure you had some choice words for him. You know, you're like, all right, I'm done. I'm not heading over there. And, you know, it is what it is. It's a good, it might not be the best look for the coach in the league, but on the other hand, the fans love the entertainment.
I'm here talking about it. Right, we're now talking about it because I it was so funny. You can Google the clip. And he's just like, I was like, this dude's not leaving, and the refs are like, you need to go. It's like, I'm not leaving, and I didn't think he was gonna go anywhere, Thomas. I was like, are they gonna drop the puck? They weren't gonna drop the puck, right? There's no way they were gonna be like, well, all right, we'll just let him stay.
I don't think so.
I mean, it reminded me of the scene in youth hockey that you see when you have the crazy parent who's screaming down at the 10-year-olds, and then the ref will literally stand there and wait till that parent walks out of the rink, and that's what it seems like, just at a bigger stage.
Nothing like giving in to your kid's temper tantrum.
Right? It would have been great, right, if the refs just finally like, all right, we'll let him stay. Like, what were they going to do? Were they going to call security and have him physically escorted out? What would have eventually happened? I would like to see it. Would they still be waiting?
No, I don't think so. I'm surprised that they didn't hand him a bench minor. I mean, that would be the next thing probably, right? We give him a bench minor, then another one. Now you're on a 5-on-3 penalty kill on top of all the other stuff. So,
okay.
You know, sooner or later, one of the assistant coaches in Philly would have probably been like, all right, like, you made your point. Time to go.
Yeah, that would be good parenting, right? Like, you don't let your kid throw the tantrum and then just give him the candy or whatever. You're like, no, we're gonna take it away from your older brother, too, so that the older brother is mad at the kid for throwing the tantrum in the first place.
No, it's a funny interaction. I'm sure everybody got a chuckle out of it, and everybody moved on. It is what it is.
Everybody learned a thing or two about you, Thomas, here on this little interview. Denzel Washington, thank you, Mitty, for bringing that up and getting Thomas talking.
Oh, and Thomas, I'm making you a very special jingle. I can't wait to show it to you, maybe next week.
Yep, we got some stuff coming for you on the radio, Thomas. Thanks. We're heading to commercial here, the Sports Machine with Slim. When we come back, we'll be talking college basketball. This is New Hampshire Talk Radio. WKXL's on 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester. Strategery. Is it a real word?
It could be.
George Bush used that back in the day, Mitty.
Strategy?
Strategery.
Oh, strategery. Well, it's very strategic.
It's a strategic move to use the word strategery in conversation as president of the United
100%.
States. 100%. He might have done it after he left office, though. I don't know if that makes it any better. Strategery, like I'm going to try and out-strategic somebody else.
Yeah, you can de-strategize somebody, you know, and that kind of take them off guard, de-strategically.
So here's the strategery point and why we come back from this commercial. Strategery is what I want you to use when trying to figure out how you're going to win your office bracket pool. And so what strategery means to me in the world of making picks is you kind of got to go against the grain.
You sure do.
Everybody else, if you ask around, everybody's taking UConn, the Connecticut Huskies, to go all the way again. So let me put on my strategery hat a little bit and say it is very difficult to go back-to-back in anything.
The last team to do it was the Florida
Gators with Billy Donovan.
Yeah, 2007.
Look at Mitty. I'm surprised you know this. That's dropping some sports.
Well, you know who was on that team, right?
Al Horford.
Al Horford, right.
Horford. And was Haslam on that team? There was another big guy on their team was very good. And I think it was actually the kid from New Hampshire. I think Matt Bonner.
Matt Bonner.
Bonner, that's Bonner. It.
Yeah, I actually...
Was he on that team?
I graduated the same year as Bonner, and I got the pleasure of getting my absolute butt handed to me by him in my senior year. It was pretty bad.
What, in a fight?
No, babe. Oh,
he beat you up?
No! Nobody beats me up. I'm too nice. Plus, I wear glasses now.
Nice. Yeah, protection. Strategery.
Exactly.
See, that's the type of strategery I'm talking about. So, listen, we're not going to be picking UConn.
No. I think we kind of have to pick UConn. They are literally like the most bulletproof team in this entire thing.
Love to hear it, Mitty. Keep going.
Seven returning players from last year. A fantastic coach that has more experience in this exact situation than so many others. They got the school history. What's this going to be, their seventh championship if they win? Second time?
When they win.
They're just built like a pro team. It's like Alabama was in football all those years with Nick Saban. This team is built the right way.
Oh, man, I love to hear this.
You know, the fun thing about brackets is you also have to pick a bunch of upsets. Strategery tells you that in the first two rounds, you're going to lose at least one of the one seeds, probably two, and you're going to have at least one 10 seed or higher that goes to the Elite Eight. And it just has to be picked. It's just, which ones do you pick? And I got a couple good ones for you.
Okay, then we did not even really collaborate at all on this before the show today. Mitty shows up here. It's like 10 minutes before we're taking the air. We say our hellos. We're talking a little bit back and forth. Okay, hey, what are we going to talk about on the show? 2-3 minutes, boom. We're talking basketball with the Celts. We're talking to Thomas Polk about health insurance and Denzel Washington. Now here we are talking college basketball. And he's set up for exactly what I want to talk about, and that's the strategery of going all in on a higher-seeded team. This is how you do it. Last year, it was Florida Atlantic. They were, I forget what their seed number was, 10, 11 last year. I should go and look. I didn't do show prep, sorry. But they were a high seed, or low seed, whatever the heck the number is. If you had them, you won your office pool, is my point. So there's two routes to go. Mitty, I'm going to ask you for your high seeds in 1 second. Before I do, we're going to just rewind so everybody knows. Back-to-back champions in the NCAA college basketball world here. Mitty was correct. The last time we've seen it, 2006-2007 with Florida. Before that, I'm going back to 1991-1992 with Duke. Before that, as I scroll down, I'm going to UCLA in 1973-1972, 71-70, 69-68, 60s. UCLA won seven times in a row? Holy mackerel, John Wooden. No wonder he was so good and thought of so highly. Two times since this UCLA domination has a team ever gone back-to-back. It's not going to happen again this year. I'm just telling everybody. UConn is not my pick to win at all.
I mean, it's going to happen, but yeah. Is there another team you think is better? Because coming out of the South, a lot of people have Houston, but Houston literally plays red blanket Ole defense. I think Marquette's coming out of the South. In Midwest, you got I think we're gonna have to go with Tennessee in the Midwest. So for me, those are your powerhouses on that side, and then on your other side, you got Connecticut and, to me, Arizona. What do you think? You got some better teams?
I think that, yeah, I'm going opposite you on a bunch. I think Arizona's a bunch of softies.
Where's that opposite you? Division I college?
It's really not well known, but okay. They're going to make quite an impression in this tournament.
Well, it's not well known because nobody goes opposite me.
As an aside, on that Florida team, Noah, right, was the last kid. Yannick Noah's tennis player, his son, Joaquim Noah, what the heck was that guy's name? But he was good. He was a bad man in college. He went on to play for the Bulls a bunch. Wild card, loved to get testy and feisty and physical it up. But yeah, he was the other big on that team with Al Horford for Florida. So they had two legit professionals on that team, led by, you know, Al Horford, 20-plus years or so in the NBA here. Guy's still making an impact. That's the type of team you have to go back-to-back. Does UConn have that player or those players this year? Well, I don't know, because they lost their two best players from last year's team. First off, like the kid that got drafted by New Orleans, he was their best player last year. He's gone, and then the other big man they had, he was drafted in the first round, I forget by who, but now he's gone. So it's a different squad this year. What team do I think can compete with them? Well, number one, I think Marquette.
Yeah, Marquette's nasty.
Marquette is just, they're physical, they're tough. They might not be the biggest team, but they're strong at every position.
They don't turn the ball over.
Just smart, a great coach, and there's just going to be extra motivation when they play the next time because they just got beat in the conference tournament against UConn. And if you watch the second half, you'd be like, hey, Slim, dude, you're really reaching to say Marquette could beat UConn because UConn looked much better. I'm just saying they didn't have their best player. Marquette's best player was out. And I just feel like UConn's going down at some point, and history would be on my side when I say that.
Absolutely. Speaking of history, I think we're going to make some, if you're interested in hearing this bold prediction.
Right into that microphone. Let me hear it.
All right. So I think that in each of the four
brackets,
divisions, you are going to see a lot of upsets, but all four 12 seed teams are going to win over all four 5 seeds. And number 11 seed in the West, New Mexico. Oh, wait, no, sorry. Where is it? Where's New Mexico?
New Mexico's in the West. You got a number 11 playing against Clemson,
right there.
Number 6.
New Mexico playing against number 6 Clemson. I think that New Mexico is going to make it at least to the Sweet 16, maybe the Elite 8, and they're going to have some huge upsets because New Mexico is not an 11th seed. They are a nice team with a really strong backcourt. Tell us a little bit about the backcourt.
Eddie House's son is on New Mexico, as is Jamal Mashburn's team. Mitty, how many games have you seen New Mexico play this year?
I've seen them play about 3 or 4 games, but I watch the highlights a lot. They have a backcourt that is so well controlled, and they are a really, really, really good offensive team. They're solid on defense. They play well together. They do not turn the ball over at all. They force turnovers. They are just protection-minded. They're a great team. I
think they're both freshmen, too. I'm not positive about this, but I think Mashburn kid and Eddie House's kid, I think they're both freshmen. So everybody, of course, is going to love New Mexico. I mean, that's opposite you. They just beat San Diego State in the semifinals, and then they go on and win that conference tournament. Who'd they beat in the finals? I'm forgetting, but
it
doesn't matter.
I was just going to say, if you want to look at the numbers side by side, just for their round one, they're going up against Clemson, supposedly a number 6 seed. And granted, they played different teams, but Clemson finished 21-11. The Lobos finished 26-9. Points per game, Clemson averaged 77.4, the Lobos 81.7. Opponents' points per game, Clemson averaged 71.3 and the Lobos 70.5. So far, we are literally winning all three categories. Field goal percentage, 46.8 for Clemson, 46 for Lobos, pretty much dead even. And then assists per game, 14.7 versus 14.8, pretty even. But the Lobos are going to be pushing the ball. They are going to take advantage of Clemson having some injuries and probably not playing very hard defense because they just aren't that team.
Let's see. New Mexico did lose, actually, in the conference finals.
Well, if you
did win in the conference finals.
If you bet on them to make it to the Sweet 16, you're going to triple your money. And if you take the Elite 8, you're going to multiply it by 10, which I did.
Just a little something to think about and chew on. I think we're going to have some help in segment 4 from somebody who knows more about college basketball than either of us.
Oh,
we'll be right back after a couple commercials. This is the Sports Machine with Slim on WKXL Radio, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester, nhtalkradio.com. And we're here to utilize some strategy to help you win.
That's never gonna die.
Your office pool. Now you can go with Mitty. I'm going opposite him. You can go with Mitty and play New Mexico, maybe to go all the way, who knows? But I think we're gonna ask a third party to come in and weigh in with their potential teams to be on the lookout for. My brother Dave is on the line. Good morning, Dave.
What's up, Dave?
Good morning, guys. Yeah, I'll be antithetical, Mitty, this morning.
What's that?
I'll be antithetical, Mitty. New Mexico's good. They got a good backcourt. Yeah, we're going to find out how good that Mountain West is. They got 6 teams in, more than the Big East, more than the ACC. So somebody thinks their conference is pretty good. We're going to find out how good it is.
Dave, before we dig into the college basketball action, Mitty did a little show prep. I want to give him 30 seconds to tell us about a random sports story that I do think you'll find interesting, so you can comment on it first after Mitty's done. Go ahead, Mitty.
All right. Well, this one is about a local hero that we all fell in love with and then did not treat the best. And if you know the narrative, you know it's Isaiah Thomas. And Isaiah Thomas has been injury prone, but In his last four games in the G League with the Salt Lake City Stars, he's scored 30-plus points, and he is signing a 10-day contract with the Phoenix Suns, basically to see if he can do it still. I'm really happy to see Isaiah Thomas come back to the league.
Yeah, it's a great story. Anybody who's a real fan of the Boston Celtics, you know, he's got to be one of your top two, three favorite players of the last maybe two decades.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we've had a lot of great players. Not all of them were characters that we really like. Kyrie Irving, I mean, we wanted to like Gordon Hayward. He just didn't make it happen. Isaiah Thomas brought it every game. I mean, who can forget Isaiah time and him pointing to his watch in that fourth quarter? I mean, just a really lovable guy when he was here.
Nice, Dave. We got any lovable teams in the college tournament here this year that people out there trying to win their office pools that maybe don't know a ton about college hoops might want to just take a stand on and pick to go, like, to the Final Four?
Yeah, so I think in these scenarios, you look for teams that maybe play a different type style that in a conference, you know, maybe teams know it, maybe they've seen it, they match up well against it, but you get into a tournament, you're playing teams from outside of your conference, teams that aren't familiar with your style. There's a couple of different teams that do that. I think UConn is going to get a real challenge from Auburn. Auburn is just a different type of team, plays a different type of defense, and has a different type of attack than anybody in the Big East does. I'm not saying I think Auburn is a better team than Connecticut. I think Connecticut is a better team, but that doesn't mean that in a one-day instance that Auburn can't go out there and beat them. I think that game is going to be ultra-competitive. I really like Auburn to get to that point and to give UConn everything it can handle in that game.
There we go. And then how far can they go? I mean, if you're thinking they can beat UConn, then they certainly could come back and beat anybody in the lower part of that bracket, whether it's Iowa State or whatever. They got the coach to do it. There's no reason not to take a stand on Auburn. I mean, they won the SEC the tournament, yeah, right?
Sure. For 21 of the last 22 teams to win the NCAA tournament have ranked in the top 25 offensive efficiency. And when you take the offensive and defensive efficiencies, combine them together, they've ranked in under 50. There are only 9 teams in the field this year that actually meet that metric. Auburn is one of them as a 4 seed. I don't think a lot of people are familiar with that, but there are some signifiers that you can use from previous tournaments that will tell you. UConn last year was one of those rare teams, and they, of course, went all the way. Auburn is one of those from the 4 seed this year that can do it.
Yeah, I think it's funny, you know, everybody thinks just because somebody's ranked number one or number two that they're automatically going to be a powerhouse and win everything, but in reality, these numbers aren't perfect, and they don't get them right every single year, and there's always going to be a lot of teams that are just not ranked correctly.
Dave, it seems to me this year even more than others, the prognosticators and the so-called experts on TV are, like, just hanging their hat on the number one seeds going to the Final Four, or at least the Final Eight. It's just like I'm watching everybody picking Houston, UConn, Purdue, and probably North Carolina. It just seems like anybody picking other than that is like, whoa, they're really taking a stand. And we see every year these ones get upset.
Yeah, I think that the so-called professionals make those selections every year. I think they'd rather be wrong than take a chance on a couple of long shots and then not be right. I mean, I think that's just, it's better for their profession. But, I mean, there's a reason this is called, you know, this is a tournament. This is actually a tournament of champions. I mean, you have 6 elimination games. You have to go in there. You have to win to be crowned champion. I mean, there's a war of attrition in there. I mean, these guys, they're battling injuries all the way through. This is the only sport where you have those elimination games every time you step on the floor. That's why this time of year is so much fun. Anything can happen. I mean, can all the one seeds get there? Sure, they can.
No,
but
no, they can't.
There's
can.
A reason they don't.
Right. Math says it.
So Dave, going into the tournament here, I know last week your pick to kind of win it all has been pretty consistently North Carolina, and I know you liked them headed into this. It didn't matter who they played. You probably were going to kind of like North Carolina, but with Auburn, did you have a feeling like, hey, I like them going into the tournament too, or was it just a matter of, oh, looking at the matchups and, hey, they can do well here?
Now, for Auburn, it's just style of play. I mean, the more you watch them, they've gotten better and better at it. That's why they ended up winning the SEC tournament. I'm not a huge fan. I don't pay a lot of credence to the, hey, if they win their conference tournament, they're really feeling good about themselves. I don't know how much of that really carries into the NCAA tournament. But you can see when they're playing with familiar teams and then they're really taking it to those teams, when they play that kind of odd, different type of basketball game and they're getting better and better at it, I just think that's going to transition over to the NCAA tournament very well, and I do like their draw for sure. I think San Diego State is a 5 seed in their second matchup. I think that's a gimme for them.
I liked San Diego State. I think on the air yesterday I said how much I like their team, their big guy in the middle, their Lede guy. And plus, they went to the finals last year, but maybe that's what comes back to haunt me all the time, is just the recent memory of stuff. I look at Florida Atlantic, and UConn would have to play them second round. I'm like, oh, that'll be a tough game. But really, Florida Atlanta has kind of stunk this year, so they might not even make it to that second round.
Yeah, Florida Atlantic's a different team. In my mind, they didn't deserve to make the tournament. I think they got there solely based on last year's run. And I think, people will forget they barely beat Memphis last year. And then they got lucky. They ended up playing the 16 seed that ended up beating Purdue in the first round. So they kind of got off to a good little start. Now, San Diego State's a different team, too. They've lost 8 of their last 18 games. They're 10-8. Over the last 18 games, and people have them as this juggernaut. It's like, you're playing 50-50 basketball for the last 2 months of the season. Like, I don't think that's high quality basketball. So I think I think UConn got a nice draw, but I think Auburn did as well.
Wow, it's kind of crazy how much you know about San Diego State. That's pretty impressive. I personally had all my 12 seeds winning in their first round battle, which is a bold prediction. I am well aware of that. But you know what makes March Madness super special for me? And I think a lot of people that don't even realize it is that this is the biggest tournament for most of these kids' entire lives. And this, for so many of them, is the last time that they will ever step onto a basketball court. So when it's that single elimination, when it's over, for so many of these seniors, it is over. This is their last time to do anything, maybe be on television, maybe win a championship, but they're going to be giving it so much. Have you ever noticed how big the celebration is after every single game in March Madness? Like, huge. Oh,
coaches included.
Yeah, they are into it.
Yeah, I mean, that's why the compete level, that's why it's so much fun to watch. I mean, you get to watch 16 games on Thursday and Friday, 8 on Saturday, Sunday, where these kids are given every ounce of energy they have. I mean, when those games are over, those guys are tired. Unless they won by 20, which is a rarity in the tournament, as time has gone on, the teams are just getting a little bit closer and closer in terms of their level. So, I mean, it's amazing to watch. Like, I can't enjoy watching any sport more than I do the NCAA tournament.
And honestly, not for nothing, but gentlemen, isn't it really nice to have a couple of weeks where you can just say, honey, not right now?
And it's understood. It's understood.
God, I hope my wife's not listening.
Dave, you talked about the coaches celebrating, and it made me think immediately last year when it was Arkansas's coach right in the second round. They knocked off a number one seed last year, and then the coach took off his shirt in celebration, and then they proceeded to get absolutely curb stomped in the next game, right? That was Arkansas's coach, wasn't it, celebrating like that?
Yeah. Yeah, they beat Kansas, I believe, and it was a 4-1 matchup, 8-1 matchup, and then they lost to UConn in the 4-8 matchup. Yeah, so, I mean, but that's, again, it was a game they weren't supposed to win, right? You know, of course, that team's going to celebrate that win instead of turning their attention to UConn like they probably should have, and that's the result ended up being 4 days later. It's not very good for Arkansas.
All right, we got one more team I'm looking for from you, because Auburn is a big stand. That strategy to go against Connecticut. What about on the other side of these brackets here? What's a team, lower seed maybe, that you think could potentially get to the Final Four or knock off a one seed?
So, something like 8 of the last 10 years, the number one seed's gone down before the Sweet 16. If you look at the ones that are vulnerable, I don't think UConn is. I don't think North Carolina is, so that leaves two other ones. I think TCU is going to win their first-round matchup. I think they're going to give Purdue everything they can handle in the second round. I mean, for people who haven't watched TCU, they actually beat Houston. They lost to Houston by one this year. They beat Iowa State, I think it was. They beat Texas Tech. Now, their offense doesn't always click. There are games where they struggle, but they've beat 3 of the top 15 teams in the country. So when they play their best game, you know they bring it. I just think that that's a team. You know, Purdue, the last 3 years, lost to the 13th seed, 15th seed, and 16th seed in the NCAA tournament. So they're used to going out early. I expect the same thing to happen this year.
I like it, Dave. That's what we got for people. TCU and Auburn are the two key teams for my brother, Dave. Mitty, we got about
12 seeds.
12 seeds from Mitty. Jump on whichever take you want. Take it all the way. to the winner's circle or the loser's circle, whatever you want to do. If you're lucky, you'll be on the winner's side of things. Good luck to you. We'll be back tomorrow with a live episode, 10 to 12 more deep inside college basketball on NewHampshireTalkRadio.com. WKXL, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, and 101.9 FM in Manchester.